During my planning process for the Brand Forward Design Seminar at CBC, I had the pleasure of connecting with Fred Hart of Interact. Fred and his team do some great work, including the Dogfish Head packaging rebrand. After some insightful conversations, I thought Fred would be a wonderful guest to have on the show. There is a lot of things that go into a rebrand, and it was definitely fun to hear some inside details on this one. Dogfish Head, in all of its great history, had never worked with an agency. Looking back at their existing packaging, things were all over the place and did not have much of any consistent structure. Interact worked with Dogfish to dig deep into some core brand elements and brought those to life in an entirely new packaging system. The end result? 20% increase in year-over-year sales, something that is pretty much unheard of for a brewery of the size of Dogfish. I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I did. Join in with Fred Hart of Interact on this episode of Branding Brews. Before we get into the show, I want to remind you of a very special event. I'm super excited to be participating in the Craft Brewers Conference Educational Seminars this year in Denver, Colorado. I am organizing and moderating a seminar named Brand Forward, Maximize Your Beer's Potential Through Design. We're going to kick off the seminar discussing a special design project, having myself and other designers create the CBC 2020 commemorative beer label. We will then be diving into a panel discussion to dig into tactics, best practices, and strategies for package branding that moves beer. I will be joined by Brittany Statt, Marketing Director of Rohrbach Brewing, Matt Naren, Partner and Director of Cultivator Advertising and Design, and last but not least, Jeff Nowicki, Chief Strategy Officer of Bump Williams Consulting. If you plan on attending CBC this year, it's April 8th through 11th in Denver. Keep an eye on the schedule for the seminar. You can get the full details of the conference and this seminar at craftbrewersconference.com. Now, on to the show. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Branding Brews podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Wheaton. Graphic designer and beer branding nerd all around the beer market and industry. And today I'm joined by Fred Hart, who's the creative director and partner of Interact in Boulder, Colorado. Excited to have Fred on. He's done a lot of cool stuff. They do a lot of work in the beer space, and Interact was involved doing the Dogfish Head rebranding. So how's it going, Fred?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. Wish I just had a pint in my hand.
Yeah, I know. I feel like every time I do this podcast, like either the guests, they're just like, well, I wish I had a beer. Like, why aren't we having a beer? And I don't know. It's like, got other things to do. You know, like I'm in the middle of work days. So like, I wish I could have a beer all the time, but you know, maybe not always the best.
At least we can talk about beer. We've got that.
Yeah. Done. Right. Like we probably don't do that enough already. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sweet, man. So tell everybody, like, you know, who you are and what you do and why and how you got there.
Awesome. Cool. So as you laid out already, my name is Fred. The agency that I run is Interact Boulder. We're a branding and packaging design agency that works exclusively with the food and beverage industry. As you can tell by the name, we're in Boulder, Colorado, which is a mecca for beer. So we've been fortunate to work with a number of beer clients in the space, as well as wine and liquor. And I think the greatest part of what we get to do is work in really competitive spaces. The thing that I've always loved about packaging design in particular is it's the only form of competitive design. Meaning if I'm working for Coke, they still have to sit on the shelf next to Pepsi. And if I got to work in craft beer, you know, you go to a Hazel's or a Liquor Mart or anything, there's probably upwards of 20 fridges full of craft beer. So the chess match that then ensues of how do you understand what makes you unique? How do you stand out against all of that? All of the competitive nature really, I think, gets our agency excited.
Okay. So you're on to take the challenge, huh?
Always. Yeah. I mean, there's so many cool people doing cool things, but I think that craft beer in general has a lot of conventional design or conventional thinking going on. You know, whether it's trying to out hop one another or who's got the crazier illustrations. And when you take a step back, you're usually able to weed out some of the things that that truly make you unique, and then how to articulate that in design ultimately to get someone to see you in a different light.
Right. So, I mean, and from a design perspective, I think it's kind of interesting, branding and design perspective. It's just that I feel like the shelves these days have gotten to a point where it's almost just like saturated with just crazy artwork, to which point, then no one's standing out on the shelf. And, I'm getting ready to putting together this seminar for the Craft Brewers Conference, put out kind of a tweet to beer Twitter just to see what people are thinking about beer labels and packaging these days. And I got this response from this gal who worked at a beer store, and she just basically said that the New England IPA section was just chaos. And she actually said that she said that beer moved slower because nobody can differentiate between the different packages, and she said it moves slower than the other beers. What's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's a shame. I mean, you know, New England and hazies are great. So the fact that people can't delineate one between another is a loss for us all in many ways. You're right. I mean, there is a sea of inconsistency, or a sea of like each can debuting some sort of crazy piece of artwork that when you put it all together, you know, it's like looking at a bowl of Skittles. You're not even sure where you should pay attention to. And so I actually think that right now in craft beer design, consistency or more monolithic approaches to the branding and design are coming back in vogue as a way to counteract all of the variety that's been at shelf.
I absolutely think so. And I think that you've got to build a core brand. You got to build like a brand, and it's got to be recognizable from the shelf. So, you know, yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're going to be doing one-offs out of your tap room or something, that's a little bit of a different story. But if you're going to be out there on a retail environment, then there's got to be something that you can have there for your brand. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we're in a great place where the industry has found self-expression as a weapon to be used, you know, which is awesome. Because walk down a food or beverage aisle in a traditional grocery store, there's no self-expression whatsoever. So that emotional piece is missing in one arena. Clearly it's here in beer, but we've got to figure out how to harness it a little bit better.
Right. And I think to that point, I think kind of leads me into something I wanted to ask you about. And that's from our previous conversations that the Interact spends a lot of time in retail stores, kind of just like analyzing the market. So I'd love to hear kind of how you integrate your retail research into how you brand beer, and how you, I know you also work with other products outside of beer, like food and beverage. So just how do you take in all this like analysis of the retail environment and other brands, and how do you incorporate that? How do you approach to how you approach beer?
Yeah. So we'd like to start by actually talking to all of the different quote unquote stakeholders that are involved in any brand success. So whether that's someone on the food and beverage side or on the alcohol side, but, you know, talking about beer specifically, we'll obviously try to go to as many different outlets or channels that beer is sold to understand what are those footprints like. A bodega is different than a BevMo, is different than a Costco, is different than a grocery store selling beer. So each one has a unique traffic pattern, has a unique set of consumers, has a unique set of physical kind of obstacles or display units. So we try to take all of those things into account to just understand, as a consumer walking through, what are they finding? So putting ourselves in their shoes. But the other things that we like to do are also talk to the distributors, talk to the retailers, talk to the managers of a certain establishment or the buyers, and ask them what they're also seeing and hearing and interested in, because a lot of these retailers are kind of the gateway between brands and the consumer, especially with the three-party system. Having those individuals partake in what they think is important, what's missing overall, just gives us a little bit more of a complete lens to then come back to the brands with and go, okay, we're hearing, seeing, and observing these things, and here's an insight that we're drawing from that that actually ladders up to design. It's so easy to just kind of get into a place where you just, you know, designing for design's sake.
Yeah. Is there a fire in your building right now? Are you okay?
There is. But I think I'm just going to put it out with beer, so we should be fine.
All right. So yeah, we got past the fire alarm. All right. Cool. So I'd be interested to see I mean, I think like the beer in the retail environment, I think is not necessarily new, but it, you know, in a lot of ways, it kind of is. It's kind of a fresh thing. Packaging, and there's so many products. I mean, I think comparable, you know, I think the closest comparison would probably be wine in like retail, like sure. supermarkets or yep. liquor stores. And it's also just kind of like the wild, kind of just wild west. I mean, really, there's some like kind of limits on in regards to the content you have to have for legal purposes. But other than that, like, it's just, you can do whatever you want. I'm kind of like, how do you approach taking a look at other established brands that have been around for a long time that have been on retail shelves? Like, how do you look at those and like relate that to the beer, to your beer branding work? Like, I think that, you know?
Yeah. So one of our biggest philosophies as an agency is this notion that people don't read, they recognize. We make conscious decisions every single day to read or not read something. So whether that's a syllabus in a class, a billboard on the side of the road, a newspaper, an email from a client that we're dreading, you know, even if we have that text up in front of us, we have to make a conscious decision to say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and read this. But if I flashed a Batman logo in front of you or anyone, you can't choose to not recognize something. And so that's where a picture is worth a thousand words. That's the value of design and imagery. And so what we try to do is harness that as best as possible when building brands in any space, but especially in beer, because there's a lot of text heavy design or there's a lot of pattern work, but from a distance, standing 10 feet back from a shelf trying to make a decision, you can't really recognize anything, with the exception of some of these more heritage brands or brands that are driven by their brand identity. So for instance, when we started working with Dogfish Head, we were gifted one hell of an asset in their Shark and Shield logo. Highly identifiable. It's been on neon signs. They've been around for 21 plus years at this point. So not only was there built up equity in terms of people seeing it and being consistent, but there was a visual mark there that we just had to figure out, how do we harness the power of that rather than celebrating the illustrations of the ingredients or the names or any of these other components. So that's how we really go about it. We asked ourselves every single time, if I had to send someone to a liquor store or to a grocery store to find this brand and they've never seen it before, you should be able to say, it's the one with blank. And that fill in the blank better be pretty quick and easy. Mm. If it's the one with the illustration or if it's the one with the name, you're forcing people to read, you're forcing people to get close, and that's just not the reality. And so, I mean, we try to simplify and make everything really, really strong and concise in terms of recognition. And then once you have that, you can do all of the more beautiful, nuanced pieces that really flush out a brand and bring it to life.
Right. So you're not like, it's the one that's got the pattern that has skulls and wavy lines and a hop and it's repeated all over it, and it's blue and it's green and it's yellow and it's red and orange.
Yeah, exactly. Or that's, you know, it's the one with like the hop on it. It's like, okay, cool. So which of the 3,000 am I looking at? Right. So it's about finding something that's recognizable and simultaneously unmistakable.
Yeah. So yeah, you're bringing in here Dogfish, which is what we're going to be talking about. So curious to know, like, kind of how did the Dogfish Head rebrand fall in your lap? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, to say it fell in our lap would be a disservice to the team. We had to work hard to show ourselves. Yeah. I know what you mean. It's just a colloquialism, but you know, we were fortunate to snag a meeting and get on the list of agencies they were considering. Because the VP of marketing, Neil, fantastic guy, had lived in Colorado for a while and knew that he wanted to look in the state for agencies, given the beer history here. And so, you know, I think we just connected on a really just personal level. And for us, the number one rule of great branding is not branding itself. It's actually relationships. And so at the end of the day, I think you've got to work with people you like, ironically enough, people you'd want to share a beer with after hours.
Yeah.
So that was, I think, key in just sparking a relationship and letting them know that we knew what we were talking about, that we were serious, that we're interested. But ultimately, you know, the way that the project kicked off was a hell of a trip down to Delaware, to Rehoboth, and to Lewis, to go see the brewery, the brew pub, the facility, to meet Sam, his wife, meet, you know, their whole team, everyone from the innkeeper to the janitors at the brewery to, you know, the CEOs and everything in between. Because for us, you know, there are three key components in building a very strong brand. One is understanding, what does the brand stand for? What's in its DNA? And the only way to do that, I think, especially in beer, is to go there and to feel that specific geography, that location, that culture. So once we did that, then we had to figure out, okay, what's the conversation that we want people to be thinking about when they're enjoying a Dogfish Head that's any different from all of the other 7,000 plus competitors out there now? So you find what's right about the brand by spending time with them. Then you do all the category audit stuff to figure out what are all the competitors doing and how do we differentiate. And then ultimately you have to figure out how to make both of those things resonate and relevant to consumers. And so we did a lot of really interesting consumer work on this particular project where we did online diaries. So we went out and captured, I think, 18 consumers, some of whom were super consumers, Dogfish Head loyalists.
So you captured them? Did you like throw a bag over their head? Or
we put some beer out on the side of the road and had this hanging cage that fell down and would trap them. And then we said, we have a couple questions for you.
I like your approach. Carry on.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're recruiting these individuals, and some of them are Dogfish Head loyalists. Some of them are just craft beer drinkers in general. Some of them are just turning legal drinking age and starting to get curious about craft beer. You know, they've been drinking PBR and Bud Light and Milwaukee's Best and whatnot. And so for 3 days, we asked some questions. The first day, it's like, tell us about you. Tell us about what you like to do. Tell us about your family. So submit photos of you, you know, having fun, whatever that looks like. Then the second day, talk to us about beer. What do you drink? What don't you drink? Where does it play a role in your life? And then on the third day, we really dug into the Dogfish Head brand. Do you know the brand? What do you think about it? If you've never seen it before, just looking at it, what would you assume? And there we got some just really, really interesting feedback. You learn very quickly that craft beer consumers are one very vocal crowd, and that if you fuck up their brand, they're going to let you know on Twitter and the deepest, darkest corners of the internet. It makes you really understand and respect what people love about a brand, as well as what stories people aren't picking up on, and how do you try to amplify those bits.
Right. Yeah. There's previous interviews on the show with some trademark attorneys, and it's, you know, it was kind of funny talking about how diehard craft beer loyalists.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, it's like you have like this trademark battle going on between these two breweries, and it's like all your local guys are just rooting for you. And it's funny, like if you think about like if it was laundry detergent, do you think you'd have people on Twitter arguing over their local, you know, detergent company? No, right? So it's funny in that sense. Yeah. Right. So do you think, I think one of the biggest things these days, that makes it a lot easier because of social media, because of all the tools you have available through applications and just, you know, the internet. I would love to hear if you have any thoughts on like how, so I mean, I get stepping back, I think it's really important for a brewery to get that pulse, to get that temperature of like their brand from their consumer's perspective, or from like, you know, just the people out there that are consuming their beer. Mm-hmm. Would you have any like suggestions or like for a smaller brewery to approach that? Cause I mean, I think a lot of times it's easy for people to get stuck in their own little, their own little niche, their own ways of doing things, and not really see that like that the consumer might see it from a different way. So I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, it starts with, what is the objective of a redesign or refresh in the first place? For Dogfish Head, they'd existed for 21 years without ever having worked with an agency. Incredibly creative, but as a result, their portfolio was one of the most fragmented things we'd seen in a while. You know, they had brands like Midas Touch, which at the time, and you can Google it to find images, was purple, didn't even have the Dogfish Head logo on it, let alone even the name. It felt like people didn't know that that was a Dogfish Head brand, so to speak. Same with Burton's Baton. Like, it's just a piece of type. So there was a lot of inconsistency, and what that was doing was actually acting as a hurdle for the people that love Dogfish Head to try and experiment with some of the other beers that they didn't know they even offered. So our whole objective was, how do we bring more shoppability, more consistency to the brand, while also kind of polishing things up to better compete with a very crowded category? Because when they started out back in the 90s, they were just going against big beer. And as a result of them finding success with many other craft breweries from its time, they created the category and allowed and kind of paved the way for everyone else. But, you know, the next thing they do is look up and go, shit, there's a lot of us now. So once you understand the objective, I think you can better understand how much of what you're doing is going to be a change for the consumer and how much of it is actually just augmenting what they already love. And for us, it was an augmentation.
Right. Yeah, no, that's great. And I mean, so do you think like somebody could put something out on social media being like, hey, we'd love to get your feedback on this. Like, do you think that would be an approach that, or, you know, like, to, I mean, obviously they have followers that might be a little bit more of like a cheerleader for their brand, but yeah. I mean, what do you think on that?
I think it's tough with doing things online like that. We've pitched to clients before, like, hey, you've got a phenomenal Facebook group, or you've got an incredible newsletter. This could be one way to have people kind of co-author or crowdsource thoughts and opinions. But at the end of the day, if you're being respectful and there's no ego or agenda involved on an agency's behalf, you're designing for the consumer in the first place. So, you know, it's like, it'd be like, you know, a doctor asking me what he thought of the procedure he was about to perform. I don't know, man. I'm putting my trust in you. So there's definitely a place for consumers. That's where for us, the online diaries was the right place to do it, because there was also no preconceived construct of how they should give feedback. There was no pressure on them to say what they thought were the right things. That can oftentimes be the dangerous part about research. Consumer research is, you know, you're getting people that know they're being paid to do something. Or on the internet, there's a lot of anonymity, and therefore, you know, you can talk about Hitler in the YouTube comments and then also shit on a brand when you're not sure what you're talking about.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, definitely be a lot of tools out there, but then, right, you got to kind of know what's going into it and who is going to be involved. And so that's structuring that definitely makes sense.
Context is critical. So how do you give people that?
Yeah. So out of that consumer research, through your rebranding process, what were some takeaways from that, that you then took to the actual redesign of the package branding?
The biggest insight was around people's desire to be seen as creative. You know, we all think that we're better drivers than we actually are. And we all want to be seen as more creative than we perhaps even let on to ourselves. Ultimately, we are all creative. It's just how much do you kind of exercise that muscle. And so when creativity gets paired with the beer conversation, what that comes back down to is Dogfish Head is the most creative brewery when it comes to its ingredients. Whether it's, you know, using a archaeologist to come up with the ancient ale recipe from an actual, you know, like vase that was in a supposed King Midas's tomb, or importing Palo Santo wood from Uruguay and having it in customs for a long time, or brewing things from the pine needles on the Wool Ridge estate. I mean, there's no shortage of imagination. And so how do we translate that creativity into someone's hand so that when they're seen holding a Dogfish Head, they soak up some of that persona? I mean, the amazing thing about beer and beverages in general is they say something about you. Just like the watch on your wrist or the shoes on your feet or the, you know, purse on your arm. They're a social cue. And so what beer you're holding says a lot about you. And we wanted our beer brand to stand for creativity. And the nice thing is culturally, there's a real appetite for more transparency and understanding in what goes into beer. So what we did was we actually paired this notion of creativity with transparency and used our beer branding and packaging as a form of education. So on the side panel of every single 6 and 4 pack, you will see a bottle silhouette filled with the actual ingredients used in the brewing process. So often these things are guided or there's some crazy story around it. And if you were actually asked about what's in your beer, you wouldn't be able to tell someone. And that's a source of insecurity. We wanted everyone, whether they were a hardcore craft beer aficionado or a first-time drinker, to be able to understand what exactly went into their beer so they could be proud to talk about it.
Right. Jeez, excuse me.
You could use a beer.
Yeah. So, and I think the ingredients part, right, I think that's... that is, I think, a big thing. More people are becoming hip to, I think, from a number of different approaches or different ways to looking at it, is that more experienced craft beer drinkers like to know what kind of hops or what kind of ingredients are in it. But then you also have the aspect of people that aren't as experienced drinkers of craft beer that are interested to know what kind of ingredients, or I should maybe even better, flavors are in it. And I think one of the successful things about the Sequench ale,
yes,
and the success of that, is that, and if is that like an actual, is that like a Goza beer? Goza?
Yes, it is, actually. You nailed
okay.
it.
Okay. Right. So, and I've talked about this before, I think, with some other people, and I think on the show, but you know, like to your common beer drinker, you, if you have the word like Goza, like really big on the can, like, people are gonna be like, what in the world is that? But the way the Dogfish approached it, or you and Dogfish approached that, being that, like, didn't even say the word, if I think, on the front of the can. It just says, you know, sea salt and lime, and the flavors are really visualized in the ingredients, like in graphics. So I imagine that did a big increase in, like, people that were like, oh, like, that sounds like it tastes really good, I'm gonna try that.
Yeah.
So,
and that comes back to the notion of people don't read, they recognize. I could romance you with a lot of flavor language, but how much better would it be to just show you those sea salt crystals or those lime twists or the black limes that are brewed in it? So that's what we really, really focused on, was just, you know, what we would call in food and bev world, appetite appeal. How do we just kind of get you like salivating or really interested in what's going into that? Or, you know, their blood orange IPA, you know, flesh and blood. How can we, which is a crazy name, but how can we show you the ingredients in that to also pique your interest along with the story behind the beer?
Right. Did you know, going into this, were there any of these individual brands that were already, leading the pack, was that something that was already doing well, or that did just kind of really took off because of the rebrand?
Yeah, so Sequench actually hadn't existed at the time that we started working with them. So we launched Sequench with them. When we did our redesign, we not only touched bottles, 6-packs, 4-packs, and carriers, but we launched them into cans for the very first time. So we designed the can system, which, as you can imagine, is a little different than a beer bottle label.
Yeah.
And then the can wraps, I should say, for the 12 packs and stuff. So it's hard to say there was never a before and after of Sequench Ale, but I think it just proves that the design system was flexible enough to work with all sorts of varieties of beer, and that ultimately it played up the creative components and, most importantly, the ingredients, which Dogfish Head celebrates more than anything. And, you know, think about the trends in food and beverage. People want to know what's in every bar, whether it's an RX bar with the ingredients on the front panel, or a kind bar, being able to see the ingredients through the transparent packaging. We're all really interested in just like better understanding what we're eating and consuming. And this coincided with, I think, that cultural interest really well.
Mm. Can you tell me a bit about the actual creative process? I'd be interested to hear, like, if you explored any avenues that seemed like they could work and then they didn't work. Just basically, like, what did you try through or learned through the process of the redesign that led to the current packaging that is now?
So,
or like any lessons, yeah, lessons learned through that?
There's a couple hidden nuggets that most consumers will never understand or get, and that's perfectly fine. But in terms of selling in a new idea and direction for the brand, were really important and got them excited. And excitement is ultimately what you need if you're going to hand the brand over to the owner, and they got to drive the car ultimately at the end of the day, right? So as we were going through our work, one thing we noticed that we didn't have that some of the brands did was a brand color. We looked up and down, you know, Sierra Nevada has its green, you know, Stone has kind of the black. There's a lot of like brands out there that own iconic colors. Of course, you have the Bud Light blue and Budweiser red, et cetera, but those are really only one varietal brands. We wanted to figure out, after 21 years of craft beer, was there any brand colors that hadn't been occupied? And we were extremely delighted and surprised to find this very poetic coincidence that craft paper as a material, which, you know, is the most authentic, raw, natural form of paper, hasn't been bleached, hasn't, you know, had all these processes applied to it. Craft paper, or craft as a color, was actually uncaptured by any other competitor. And so we wanted to try to fuse that into the Dogfish Head, which we felt was the brewery of all breweries that was most authentic to its ingredients, most authentic to transparency, never using fillers, never using flavorings, et cetera. So what we ended up doing was fusing that craft color behind the identity of the Shark and Shield on every single 6-pack, 4-pack and bottle label. And so that was just a really nice coincidence. And you can imagine, as we're presenting that to the client, they love the idea, one, of owning a brand color that hasn't been owned, and two, just the synchronicity of a craft brewery, craft material, authenticity of ingredients, even that it comes down to your packaging ingredients now. So that was a big one. And then, you know, with the ingredient story we're telling, we put them all over the handle. And the biggest thing for us is the handle's often an utter underutilized territory. Most brands have copy up there, but of course you've got bottles inside the 6-pack. You can't see it as it's merchandised. It's only after the fact that you realize it's there. And we said, how can we make the handle work harder? So again, playing into recognition, we place a lot of ingredients up there. But metaphorically, what we loved is Dogfish Head packs more ingredients, more hops, more whatever into its beer than anyone else. And as a consumer now, every time you have a 6-pack or a 4-pack in your hand, you've got that handle in your hand, you have a literal handful of ingredients now, because they're cascading from the top all the way down onto the front panel. And so that, as a story and as a way to relate back to the brewers, you know, and Sam, the way he used to brew by hand in small kettles, gave him and his sales team a really nice romantic story to pitch to retailers and things of that nature. And just a reason behind, you know, why we've got this new look.
Yeah. So yeah, I love the idea. Basically, essentially just, the idea of using the craft as like, to translate the idea of like the rawness and like, starting from just like your most basic raw, you know, yeah, like the the transparent of the kind of bottle imagery, and the to kind of, and then showing the ingredients through that. So yeah, it seems like you basically were able to take all of these insights and really visually represent those. And that's what I think is, like, you know, obviously challenging to do, and I think it's super important to. I think it's interesting talking about through this process is that for other people to hear how you can take these ideas and translate them visually. I mean, that's all kind of the part of it's not the name of the game, but it's definitely one element of the game for sure, you know?
Yeah. It's just finding intention in everything you're doing and relating it back to what's true about your company. Every mm-hmm. brewer in the country has something that makes them unique. And so it's like, how do you unearth that through design? Cause that's ultimately what a consumer sees. So that was cool. But in terms of what didn't work, I remember we blew up the Dogfish Head logo so large that it couldn't even fit on the front. We had actually had it wrapped from the side to the front, and you know, if our brand name is Dogfish Head, let's just show the head of the dogfish. And we got it so large that it acted as kind of this like beacon. And we thought, you know, maybe standing 10 feet back, you would see that before you saw anything because it was so domineering. But it was just too far of a stretch. And I think, you know, nice idea, shitty in execution.
Oh, yeah, right. That's another thing. Yeah, you have this concept, you're like, or idea, and you're like, oh man, that is it. And then you try to apply it, and then
that is not it.
yeah. I guess this is taking a little sidestep here, but definitely something that's been big in the beer news these days is the Dogfish using the independent seal so large. Was that, do you have any, any input or in that at all? I mean, I was, you know, kind of curious to hear.
Yeah, no. So I can't take credit for that. That's all Dogfish Head. So they've got an incredible internal design team that, you know, after we built the system has been doing a wonderful job extending everything, maintaining the rules, maintaining shopability, all that good stuff. So that was something that they hatched internally. And, you know, on one hand, we're like, what the fuck did they just do? Like, you blew up a certification that large on your pack. But I actually think there's a lot of genius to it. They must have found somewhere, I'm assuming, that consumers either weren't sure that they were still independent or that they're, you know, they're a national craft beer company at this point, and they're going into so many local markets that, you know, are they really small anymore? Are they the little guy? Did Sam get bought out? This is one way of reinforcing the notion that they're still proudly and fiercely independent. So I think it was a point of pride. I mean, you also can't deny the fact that we're talking about it right now. I'm sure Adage and Fast Company and all of these other marketing kind of industry folks took notice and then gave the brand a bunch of kind of unpaid media spend as a result of just bringing up the name. So I think it's pretty brilliant. What I will be curious about is how long does that actually stay there? You know, was it a marketing tactic or is that there to live forever? But nonetheless, I applaud them. That's the one thing about Dogfish Head. They're always brave and they're always willing to take creative risks. And so it's totally in line with who they are, which I think gives it more authenticity.
No doubt. Yeah. And I think, I think it's a fun approach to solving that problem. And I think I've always been kind of curious when that, I think that came up. I think the idea or the fact that Sierra Nevada, does not use the independent seal, if I know correctly, but they do, you know, and I think they could be a same argument, if not even more so for Sierra Nevada, that like to a consumer that may not know if they're owned by Big Bear. I mean, they kind of have, they're so established, they're so well-known, and they're so out there that like you might think they're owned by a big brand. They do have some subtle nods on their packaging. I think it's like family owned and argued over, which I think is a I think it's a really great tagline, and it lets you know that it's not owned by a large, you know, beer company or whatever. But yep. I could definitely see them, from my perspective, I could see them benefiting from something maybe not as extreme as what Dogfish is doing, but that fits Dogfish, but something that like would signify a bit more that it's like independent or family owned or whatever. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, Sierra Nevada reminds me a lot of Patagonia in terms of like, I know that Patagonia, they've since started doing like food stuff and some of it might be organic, but they don't rely on anyone else's independent seal or organic seal or some sort of certification. They just continue to rely on their own voice. And I think that Sierra Nevada in that kind of like, what did you say? Family owned and argued.
Family owned and argued over, yeah. I think is what it is.
That's a great way to just capitalize on their own voice. So rather than relying on third parties for validation, I hope they continue to try to double down and just use all the incredible things that they've done for the industry to say, we still got it, you know, and we got a lot more to say.
For sure. No, that's awesome. So I guess we can jump in back. I think that was a good little aside there, but what are some of your favorite elements from the Dogfish rebrand? Like what are some of the things that you really loved or maybe came out of it that you didn't think would and that you kind of like take away as your favorite things?
I actually love seeing what we haven't personally done as an agency to the brand, but the way it's been appropriated. the way that our work set up some rules and has allowed them to thrive inside of it. So what I'm really talking about is actually their seasonal line. So what they've done, and they've had a tradition of this far before we started working with them, was they would use an illustrator to do all four of that year's seasonals. And then that illustrator would pick a good friend to then do the next year and kind of get that approved with Dogfish Head. So there was like a really organic way and spreading the Dogfish Head brand around the kind of creative community like that. But we had to figure out how should the architecture change from the core beers. So your 60 Minute, your Namaste, et cetera. So that when you get to Pumpkin and some of the other seasonal varieties, how do we actually give more room in canvas to celebrate the artists at work? So I've loved watching particularly this last year's batch of Dogfish Head seasonals. It's the same sort of like, cool, logo goes here and you reserve this much canvas for the artist. But, you know, it's always fun to see. And I think Michael Hacker is doing this year's work and it's incredible stuff. And then next year they'll have a different artist. So I've just loved to see Dogfish Head breathe new life into every seasonal, but still kind of maintain a system through it all.
Was that something you planned for during the rebrand process, knowing that these seasonals would have to have like some sort of open canvas?
Yeah.
And then like you did. Okay. And like, so how did that go? I mean, you know, I think one of the big things is like, you know, how do you brand your core, you know, your core lineup or your flagships versus, you know, having seasonals or specialty series that still represent the core brand of the brewery, but then also stand out on their own. It's curious to hear how that process went, like knowing that you've got these flagships or, you know, these core beers, and then you need to also create this system that allows this open space for these. Like, how did that go?
It's understanding that, again, it isn't about the agency, like controlling or taking ownership over the design. It's actually just being prideful and understanding who are we working for. So when we got to the seasonal line, we knew that we wanted to get out of our own way and provide as much flexibility to these incredible artists. So what we tried to do was, okay, let's make the logo a little bit smaller, but let's still have it kind of in the same relative place with the same craft backing. But let's now not force the brand to use its custom Dogfish Head font for all of its names. So they have their signature font, which they oftentimes use. And instead say, why don't we also add typography to the arsenal of the illustrator? So now they can also do the name of that particular beer in whatever hand they feel is best that matches their illustration work. So, you know, it's just kind of setting up a rough template and then letting people run with it. And it's proven to be really successful. They still get all of the variety they want without any of the headaches of the brand becoming fragmented like it had in the past.
Awesome. Yeah, so basically kind of set up the kind of the template, kind of just a little bit of like rules of you need to stay within these lines, but then otherwise you've got this like open space to do your thing.
Yeah, I mean, essentially we're just thinking about sub-branding. So the core is about celebrating the creativity of the ingredients that they brew. The seasonal line is about celebrating the creativity of the artist. And so when you have those two kind of things going on, you figure out how design should adapt for the different instances.
Great. So yeah, you kind of knew, you mentioned earlier, like the intent, but so you kind of knew just basically the strategy of what you wanted to focus on for each line or whatever. And that's basically how you went about it.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So I think one of the big things to talk about obviously was the success of the rebrand. So curious to see or hear, you know, how did the rebrand do in the market? Like, and how was it received? And like, what kind of steps did you take to measure that? Like both like from a sales perspective and also just from like people's perception of the rebrand.
I'd be lying to you if we didn't say that when the Dogfish had announced it on all social media, we weren't reading every single comment to see what people had to say. Some of them not so kind, some of them glowing, you know, you get the good with the bad, but at the end of the day, it was overwhelmingly positive. So we were really enthused by that as kind of the first gut check. Ultimately though, you know, what we're doing is trying to be sales effective. If the business can grow as a result of the design, then that means ultimately we've benefited the consumer because there's stronger engagement there. And so what was phenomenal is after having been in market for a year, they realized a 20% increase in sales year over year, which was phenomenal. We also received anecdotal feedback of certain markets actually selling out of their beer for the first time in a while, which Dogfish Head knows, you know, month by month inventory, what people traditionally order in terms of retailer and seasonality and all of that stuff. And the velocity is accelerated to a point where certain markets ran out. And so that's a good problem to have. And then, you know, just watching them be able to extend to all sorts of new varietals with ease, no longer a headache for them, no longer this dystopian, dysfunctional brand was incredible. So, you know, ultimately what we care about is when all of those different brands come together at shelf, do they work together? Are they, is there synchronicity? Are they starting to what we would call billboard? And they did. And then, of course, you know, it's always nice to receive like a little note from Sam just saying how happy they are with everything. Ultimately, the client being happy is what we care most about.
Yeah, that's the best feeling. I totally agree. I mean, it's obviously it needs to land, you know, out in the real world. But yeah, that little nod or little pat on the back is always a great feeling for sure. Yeah. And yeah, and I mean that kind of growth, I think is not kind of unheard of, right? I mean, in regards to like a rebrand, seeing those kind of sales, and then also just and year over year, because I think typically you do a rebrand and it builds a nice buzz and then that can kind of fade away a little bit. So
yeah, they've managed to sustain double digit growth at a time when the craft beer industry is growing in the single digits. So they're outperforming, and you know, that's a point of pride. And, you know, don't get me wrong, design had a lot to do with it, but you're also dealing with an incredible founder who's got a ton of vision, an amazing team he's built. So there's a million stars that have to come together and align for anyone to have success. Design has a big role to play, but you know, we're proud to be one of several forces at play there.
Well, yeah, man. I think that's a great place to leave this here. I think
awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate you sharing some insights. I think I think we had some great conversation around this, and I you know, obviously it's a great success story. I think it's a great rebrand. You know, so I think it's a great case study to talk about, and I think you've done a great job at, you know, talking through this. So I appreciate your time.
Yeah, I couldn't be more stoked to be on here with you. I know my mom's going to be probably the first 100 listens, and we'll be elated. So
you're all a good right. Man. We'll make sure she gets the link. Yeah,
perfect.
And I'll track those as unique listens.
Yes, so. Please do.
Well, cool, man. So speaking of links, how can people find you online or social, or how do you want people to find where you're at?
Yeah, so interactboulder.com is our website. We're just about to launch a new one here in March, so we're stoked about that. We've got an awesome Instagram where we capture all of our obsessions with the food and beverage industry, and that's just interactboulder as well. And then, you know, love connecting with people, so LinkedIn is a great place for those sort of things.
Perfect. Well, great, man. Thanks again, Fred. I really appreciate your time, and yeah, thanks for joining.
Thank you, Ryan. Keep crushing.